Washington State and Colorado legalized marijuana several years back. Alaska, Oregon, and the District of Columbia quickly followed our lead. This rapid change in marijuana policy led writer Bruce Barcott to wonder what the future holds for legal pot. His new book is called Weed the People, The Future of Legal Marijuana in America. Barcott told Ross Reynolds he wrote the book to figure out just what legalization means.
I have figured out a few things. One of the big questions I wanted to answer in this book was, holy cow, what have we done here? We've just legalized marijuana. But really, what does that mean? It's a change in history, but is it going to be a positive change or a negative change? I went in really as a pot agnostic. I really have no dog in the hunt. It wasn't my thing. And I had a lot of concerns. I was just kind of skeptical going in. But I got to say, 2 years later, I really am proud of my state for making this historic change. I think it's the right thing to do. I think we're handling it fairly well. There are a lot of bumps along the road. It's funny, as I go on the road and talk with people about the book, I get one of the comments I get, especially from people in Washington and Colorado, is sort of complaints about various problems with the laws. And I say, you know what? I hear you. I agree. But what we've got here is the beta version of these laws. Mm-hmm. And I think Oregon and Alaska will have the 1.0 version. I think eventually California will have the 2.0 version. But we're the pioneers, and so we get the raw, rough draft.
Well, in Colorado, they already had regulated medical marijuana, and they kind of were able to make a segue to there and recreational marijuana. How has that influenced the evolution in both states since they both legalized marijuana at the same time?
It had a huge impact. Colorado essentially had a 2 years head start on us because they had that regulatory system already in place, this great framework for medical marijuana. They had a state agency that was handling it. Taxes were paid. They had a sort of seed-to-sale tracking system that went on. We didn't have that. We had a chance to do that, but Governor Gregoire essentially vetoed the bill back in 2011 that would have done that. And that really put us behind. The result was on day one in Colorado, January 1st, 2014, and I was there in Denver. It's kind of a crazy scene, but they were ready to go. Shops were open, full of product, and their systems were sort of online and running smoothly. We had sort of the equivalent of a soft opening, when you open the restaurant quietly before the grand opening. We did it in July of last year, and I think we had maybe four or five shops open around the state. Very little product. I mean, like Cannabis City opened here in Seattle, and then they had to essentially shut down 4 days of the week because they didn't have anything to sell. I think, product is now in the stores. We've got a glut of it right now. But we're eventually coming online. I think that was kind of planned. Like Washington kind of said, we're going to take this a little slower, and we'll let you go ahead, Colorado, and you deal with those problems that we'll watch and see what happens.
Bruce Barcott has written his book about the legalization of marijuana. It's called Weed the People. Now, I think of it as being provisionally legalized. The federal government, of course, still calls it a Class 1 substance. And they've given the states like us a few years to try this out if they meet 8 conditions, including not allowing pot to cross state borders, keeping it away from kids. It's still pretty early on, but are there any signs that legal pot regulation is going off the tracks and we're running afoul of these conditions the federal government set?
Honestly, I don't think so. I mean, a lot of the concerns that the federal government had were the concerns that I have as a citizen and as a father of 2 teenagers. But really, we haven't seen a spike in crime. We haven't seen, a spike in addiction rates, although that data is really going to be, months and years down the road. I haven't seen or heard of, a new flood of marijuana into the high schools. And so a lot of those concerns, are being addressed. And, from the from what I hear on the industry side, from people trying to sell this, the 1,000-foot rule that the federal government wants enforced, has made it tough to find locations for retail shops. But, that's by design. It's part of this early, go slow, go cautious strategy.
How much of this federal tolerance is kind of dependent on the fact that President Obama is in office? We could have a Republican president next time around. Could we see federal policy rapidly shift?
Yeah, it's funny. I think a year ago when I was working on this book, I really thought that we had, at that point, we have 3 years to get this right, to work it out, because the next president could step in and the first week just flush it, just say, nope, we're stopping this. A year later now in 2015, I really think that it's going to be more difficult to do that for the next president. I think that we've got some momentum here in Colorado and Washington. The pillars of civilization have not fallen. We've got Oregon and Alaska coming online. And the next president, I think, will come in just as California has legalized. And that's a huge step forward.
I got to say, as I was reading it, reading about Bruce Barcott, the person kind of reacting to this, I don't know how old you are, but
48.
I was reading this and thinking, this is not quite the reaction of a lot of other 48-year-olds I know. You seem much more skeptical than a lot of people in your age group.
I was, you know, and part of it was, like I say, you know, pot was just not my drug. I'm more of a beer, wine, and bourbon kind of guy. And I, you know, with two young teenagers, I had a lot of concerns about them having greater access to it. I also was just, you know, frankly, I didn't like the smell of pot, as small as that may seem. So I came to this book. You know, my wife's a writer as well. Her name's Claire, and I would talk with her. And she, at one point, we said, you know, this could be a really interesting book, essentially because I'm going in as a skeptic. I've got no dog in the hunt. If marijuana disappeared tomorrow, it really wouldn't make a difference in my life. But I'm really fascinated to see how this project plays out. And it turned out to be a really fun and fascinating and oftentimes funny book.
And how about for your teenage sons? One of the concerns is it's sort of saying it's okay, and we actually know from a lot of research it's really not okay for teenage brains to be consuming massive amounts of marijuana.
Yeah.
Is it more in their lives? Are they smoking pot?
No, they're not.
As far as you know.
It's more in the our family conversation. I mean, this was one of my great fears going into this book. It's like, oh, great, I'm writing a book about pot, and I have two young kids, and now I'm going to have to talk to them about it. And the conversation no parent wants to have. But honestly, one of the greatest things that came out of both legalization and this book is the forcing of that conversation. You know, I had to have the conversation with my kids. I thought it was going to be one big conversation at the end of the book. But it turned out to be a series of rolling short conversations that happen in the car right on the way to school, sometimes over dinner. You know, my daughter's 16 now, and she thinks it's hilarious that her square father's writing this book about pot, you know. And she'd say, how's that pot book coming along, Dad? And I say, well, funny you should ask. You know, I actually talked to a researcher today who's working on, you know, the developing brain and how cannabinoids affect it and this sort of thing. So, you know, as I went along, I could have these conversations with my kids about pot, how it affects the body, the brain, the developing brain, you know, the fears of connection to schizophrenia, in a way that had some actual facts behind it, that had some science behind it, and wasn't just a sort of, I don't know, it's scary, don't do it. And it's illegal, by the way, for you under 21.
I've been kind of interested whether pot becomes socially acceptable in a way that it never was before. I mean, people have smoked pot in social gatherings,
right.
But does it become something where there's a cocktail party, and of course there's a vaporizer there. I haven't seen any of that. Do you think that is happening or will happen?
It's interesting. I think that's very much a generational thing. You know, among people in my generation, I'm in my 40s, we grew up with just say no. And for us, it's a huge turn to make. You know, we dropped the most legal strictures against marijuana, but the social strictures, the social rules are very much still in place. And, you know, so I go to parties with my peers and, you know, I live on Bainbridge Island, and it's not something that's, you know, coming out on trays in the middle of a party on Bainbridge Island, right? There are other circumstances, though, where you're among a smaller group of friends and you know each other better and you have a sense of what's going to make people feel comfortable or uncomfortable. I mean, I was at a party for the book in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago, and a friend of mine was hosting, and one of the guys who's in the book mentioned, hey, you know, I'm going to come to the party. Should I bring something along? And, you know, he wasn't talking about a glass or a bottle of wine. And I thought about it and I said, you know, here's an interesting situation. I think what we got to do is check with the host.
That's Bainbridge Island-based writer Bruce Barcott. His new book is called Weed the People, The Future of Legal Marijuana in America. Barcott spoke with Ross Reynolds.